And away we go. It's a Getaway Friday morning. First Friday in the month of October. October 1st, a matter of fact. 2021. It's the Pastor Spot, a weekly radio ministry of Community Christian Fellowship, heard live every Friday at 11:10 a.m., repeated Sunday morning at 8:10 a.m., and on Wednesday at 3:10 p.m. You can catch it on the web, wwgh1071.com. Go to Program Archives, and they are all there. Pastor Spot is the first show. The Community Christian Fellowship Sunday service airs every Sunday on this station at 12:15 p.m., and want to thank the, we had a repeat on last week, but a listener sent me a note, Sharon, who says she loves the show, enjoys the show every week, so thank you, Sharon, for being out there. Pastor Steve Whitaker joins us in the studio. Pastor, how you doing?
Morning, Scott. I had to throw you that check before I forgot it.
That's okay. Throwing
hey, good morning, good morning. Hey, we're here this morning. We'll also have Frank Robinson in studio for additional comment. Thank you, Frank, for being here. And I see Doris Collimer is watching. Doris, good to see you. And I hope you're feeling better. I know you weren't just a little bit ago. And by the way, we need to pray for Doris's daughter's father-in-law. A guy by the name of Mitch, suddenly found out he has some real issues. Mm-hmm. And I just did a one call to the church a few minutes ago. And if you guys want to pray for him too, I'm sure it would be very, very welcome. A guy by the name of John McCabe was flown to the hospital this morning with heart issues, and he's currently in surgery. So if someone would like to pray for them, be great. But this morning, I want to welcome you. I am the pastor of Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio, and we're at 209 East Water Street. I'd love to have you come and visit us. Our Sunday morning starts at 9:30 in the morning with a Bible study hour, and then we go into our time in the sanctuary with community worship, and that is at 10:30, hopefully 10:30. It never gets started on time, but we try. And we have a Sunday evening Bible study and youth group and Wednesday night prayer and Bible study times. Just a lot of things going on. Frank also does, Frank is with us today, also does two services a month at Primrose, and he also does a Bible study there. Just does some neat stuff that way. Some events that are going on this Sunday should be our day in the park, our celebration day in the park, where we make fresh cider and we do apple butter and have games and free food. Everything's free. It's in Prospect Park, and that'll be at 2:30 in the afternoon. We run that for about 3 hours. However, it looks like we're looking for a lot of rain Sunday, and because of that, we may be postponing till the following week. We've got everything okay. We've got a bounce house on reserve that we found out we can reserve again next week, a big bounce house for kids, and the park said that it could still be available. So if it looks like it's pouring rain, there's a good chance we've postponed it, and I think that's probably going to be the case. So with that going on, and then also starting this Tuesday will be our Team Kid will be coming up starting again, and we have some expanded space to use that in. So come meet us at the church at 209 East Water Street. And that is for kids from ages of 6 all the way up to preschool, actually, all the way up to 16. And that is in the 13. And that is from 6:30 in the evening to 8 o'clock on the first and third Tuesdays of the month at the church. Great time for the kids. And, of course, I'll be doing the Pizza with Pastor starting this Tuesday at 6:30, and that's for the kids 16 and up. And then we also will be doing that on the third Thursday instead of Tuesday. So a lot of stuff going on there, a lot of neat stuff going on. And we're getting ready to head into Thanksgiving. You know, I was reading a passage this morning in 2 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 14. And it says, do all things with charity. And charity in that can be translated also, do all things with love. Charity and love usually go hand in hand in the Bible, and that's why when we call charities, they're usually acts of charity or acts of love. And I was thinking about that when we were having a discussion this morning before we came on the air about people and, you know, going out when they're sick, going out doing different things and the different things we do and whether people were selfish and whether talking about personal rights. And I was just kind of listening to you banter back and forth a little bit. And, you know, what kept coming into my mind is if we all do all things with love and charity, then we're not going to put other people in a situation that's mm-hmm. dangerous.
That's right.
And if you're sick, stay home. If you never know what affects you mildly that may be the final straw for somebody else. And that's honestly true. Two people can get the same flu, the same virus, the same anything, and it can be devastating to someone that suffers with something that will adversely affect. And another person may breeze through it, and they say, well, I don't know why you're so sick. I went through it fine. I can always get a kick out of it when things go through our home. And, you know, someone might say, oh, get over it. I had it. It wasn't that bad. And maybe one of the kids will say it or whatnot. And what's interesting is, honestly, we can't really say that. Most viruses and things that go around have a general length of time and what they kind of do. We have symptoms that are kind of the same. But the truth of the matter is, something may knock someone for a loop, and it may not someone else.
You know what's odd to me? I always come back to, for example, if somebody's on oxygen, if you go into their home, usually there's a sign on the door that says, do not do certain things around this person. Now, you could go to the house next to them where the person's not on oxygen, and that sign's not going to be there. And you have the personal right to do everything that you can't do at that house, at this person's house. And that's
and
to
that
me.
That person in that first house has the right to throw you out the door.
That's right. But the problem right now with this whole thing, and people with the vaccine is what this all comes down to. You do have personal right, and nobody's going to take that away from you. Do what you want, but you do have to be cognizant with that personal right that we have senior citizens. We have people with underlying conditions that disease will affect differently, and walking in and not giving them the personal right to know that is a big problem.
You know, Scott, it's funny that this particular subject and this virus is bringing out so much of the attitude of A, personal rights, and B, people that are appalled at people that won't respect space and not show the love they should show, so to speak. And I find it interesting because this is something that applies to so many parts of our life and our walks of life. But this particular instance has seemed to have brought out more emotion than most. I see abuse that goes on every day with children. Every day. And people turn a blind eye to it. And there's not all this vitriol over, I can't believe these people are doing this and these poor kids. And there should be. And I see women that are not treated properly. I see so many young people that are, it's hard for them to get to adult life thinking they have a fair shake because they've just been rattled from day one. I see so many kids that have to witness their parents doing things that they should never have to witness, whether it's in a bedroom or whether it's in a medicine cabinet. And this goes on and on, but I don't see the fired up vitriol over all of this. And it should be there. It should be there. I mean, we're going to lose people in this pandemic, and people are going to die, and there's going to be older people die. There's going to be sad things, and I don't want that either. And I think I just shared with you my personal responsibility and how I feel personally responsible to do what I should do and to make sure that I don't spread things to people. So I'm not advocating I'll do what I want and go where I want and when I want and how I want. I'm not advocating that at all. But what I'm saying is we have some serious issues going on in this country that aren't getting near the playtime that this is. And that's been going on for quite some time. I want to know why people aren't so up in the air over the human trafficking going on. And it doesn't seem to bother anyone until it's their neighbor kid.
Well, that's exactly what this is. As I was saying with Frank before we went on the air, and it sounds horribly harsh, but the truth of the matter is, and the vaccine is not end-all be-all. We had a pastor friend of mine on this week who was telling of the death of his wife in the last month, and she was vaccinated with the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. But the problem is that If you choose not to get it, that is your choice. And I'm not going to browbeat you for it. But I think at that point, you should sign something saying, I will not go to the hospital for this. Now, that's horrible to say, but if you feel that strongly that you are bulletproof against this, then don't take up a bed from somebody who does believe in it and did get it because somebody went outside. Because I think if that was the free will choice, vaccine, or if you get sick with this, no hospital. Now, we'll treat you if you have a heart attack or a stroke or whatever, but if you test positive, we're sending you home. Because you chose this, I think you'd have a higher vaccination rate.
Yeah, but a doctor can't do that.
You can't.
Oath. You just can't do it. It can't be done.
But a person can.
Well, they could just volunteer to do that, but nobody's going to get sick and not want treatment.
Exactly. But see, that's... But,
you noticed a minute ago, I was really trying to divert this conversation. You brought it right back to where it was.
But that's what it ends up... But that's what it ends up being. That's the huge problem of it, is that it's not real until you get it. It's just like all situations. Human trafficking is not real until it affects you.
How about someone signs a document that I will not accept a disability check for my child and then treat them like dirt at home?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I see it day in and day out. Here's the one that really throws me for a loop. Are we ready for this? We almost need a drum roll. A young person has a disability because their parents were a drug addict, and they were born a drug addict, and they were born with mental issues because they were born hooked on drugs, or whatever the case may be, whatever the parent did, the kid is now born, and we're seeing it more and more every day, a lot of mental disabilities caused by that. Now, the kid is put on an IEP, the kid gets on disability, and guess where that disability check goes to? The very person that caused the problem to begin with. And it's happening over and over and over and over and over by the hundreds of thousands in this country. And those very people that caused the problem with the child are now the ones that have the responsibility of taking care of this child. And now, look, I want to say something. I'm a firm believer. I'm a firm believer in repentance. I'm a firm believer in restoration. I believe that. I believe that any parent that may have caused that problem, I believe they can repent, which they should of that. They should feel horrible pain and sorrow they caused it. You know, God can give them a new life in Christ. All that's washed away. They shouldn't have to pay for it. But now, you know, now I make a commitment. I'm going to raise my child and do the best I can with them. And I'm going to do everything I can to give them a better life. And I'm going to take whatever disability they offer me, and I'm going to use it in the proper way. I think that's fantastic. But when you have these same people that cause the same problem, that then take the money and continually use that money to stay on drugs, I think the penalty should be so harsh, it would be a huge deterrent for them to do it. Do you understand where I'm at?
I don't think anybody would disagree, except maybe the person doing the drugs.
Yeah, except for the person doing the drugs or the person. You know, it's just a sad state. But back to what I said, do all things with charity, do all things with love. Is it love to give these people money to continue doing what they're doing? Absolutely not. Now, the biggest problem that we have in this country right now, as far as what do we do with these kids, is we do not have enough good foster homes. I do not believe that any baby should be sent home from a hospital with a parent that came in and tested positive for drugs. And when they came in, or the baby tests positive when it's born, there's no way that child should go home, but they do. And the problem is, if we had enough people willing to receive those children and take them in and take care of them, we would not have this problem. The other problem that we have is we've made it so difficult to adopt many of these children that I personally have had family members that have been involved in the process where they'll take a child in and they'll nurture them, they'll take care of them, and they'll have them until they're 2 years of age. And then at the last minute, mom gets in rehab, mom gets clean for a few months, and says, I want my baby, and they get the baby back, and the adoption doesn't go through. And then within 6 months, mom's back on drugs, baby's back in a bad situation again, and those people that nurtured her for 2 years don't get the child.
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing, because in all things, I mean, I look at sometimes about the recidivism in people who are punched by their spouse, 90% being women, but there is a fraction that are men, and as soon
men
as...
don't report it.
Well, they don't report it, but the people who do, and the cops come out, and they take them to places like Turning Point, and they take...
men don't report it.
Not a lot, not a lot. And they take them to places like Turning Point, and they stay 2 or 3 weeks there, and their kids can stay there. The minute they get out, they go right back where they came, 90% of the time.
You know, it's kind of interesting. I think there's two factors that go in there. One thing is, a lot of women have a nurturing complex. Now, nurturing is great until it becomes a complex, and they think they can take a broken guy and they can fix him. And many women will bring in a guy that's broken and decide they're gonna get him, they're gonna make him right, and that doesn't always work. And the other problem is many of them have lost. It's very odd to see how it happens, but many women fall victim to that type of abuse, and it's a controlling abuse, and they actually feel that it's their fault, and they owe it to that person to go back and try and redo and make things right, and it'll be better next time, rather than realizing early on, you know, I don't have any problem with somebody that goes back to someone that was abusive one time, and if that person's willing to get help, have classes, and really turn from what they're doing, that's one thing. But to go back over and go, you are fooling yourself. You know, it's just like the woman that stays in the home with a drug addict boyfriend or husband when she's raising kids. He can go through rehab. He can go through rehab maybe twice. But after a while, all you're going to do is expose your children to the drug world. That's all you're doing, and you've got to learn to say no. I'm going to get some heat over this probably, but I truly believe the minute that you are on drugs, serious drugs, you've made a choice. Look, you made a choice to get on drugs. I don't care what you say or how you say it or how you were cursed into it or what happened. You made the choice to do heroin. You made the choice to do methamphetamines. You made the choice to do coke or whatever your drug of choice is. I truly believe if you have not lost them, you have seriously jeopardized your parental rights at that point, because there's nothing you're doing at this point that does not directly affect that child that you have chosen to give birth to. This is one of the other problems I have when I hear people talking about what they have to do a right with their body and about women's health. Look, you make a choice to have sex or not have sex. You have a choice to make unprotected sex or protected sex. I know that you know the outcome of what happens when a sperm meets an egg. We're not that dumb. And I think there's personal responsibility there. I also think that when it comes time for someone who has conceived a child, that this now is something that is a discussion between the woman who conceived and the man who provided the means for the conception, because they didn't do it. We're not asexual here. And men not only have responsibilities, but men have rights too. And I think that those things need discussed. There's so many things that we're just blanketing in this country that have got to stop, and is causing all of these things are ending up with the abuse, or sadly, in many cases, the death of a child. I personally know, now I shouldn't know anyone like this, but I personally know two separate women, because of opioid addiction, have laid on their child in bed and smothered them accidentally, and they've died. Now, how much of it goes on if me, being Pastor Steve, personally know two women that did that? Laid on their child and they died because they were so strung out, or they were crashing, or whatever it was, that they laid on their child in bed and they died. And you're telling me these kids should go home? You know, how many kids go to the hospital because they bumped into a little carfentanil accidentally? You know, how many people thought it was okay to sell the sex rights to their child to someone giving them money for their drugs? It is more common than people would ever imagine.
You know, it's an interesting conversation because sometimes I think conversations and facts are miles apart from each other because people get so lined up in what they believe that it doesn't illustrate the fact of the situation. And one of the facts of what we're talking about here, if it's rolling over on a child, which is horrible, or it's an abortion, the abortion conversation that always happens, one of the problems is where law and free will don't intersect. Because what's interesting to me about the whole abortion conversation, and people, again, can choose whichever side of that they want to be on. But what's interesting to me, certainly a man should have rights in that in some way. But in the history of the United States, before and after the Supreme Court decision, no man has ever been charged with abortion because a man cannot have one physically. Women have been charged. And this herein lies the problem.
Okay, what if they at the very least would have laws say that you were totally pro-life and you think that person should be charged? Then if the man was complicit in it, he should be charged with complicity. Look at it this way: if you're in a bank robbery and the guy with you shoots the teller, you're both charged with the same crime because you were complicit in it. I have no problem with that being complicit. There's always laws that need to be better. There's always law. Now, I'm not going down that road of whether we should charge someone with murder for abortion. I'm not talking about that. But I understand what you're saying there. But I'm saying at the same time, I think that we have to recognize people that want to step up and maybe take responsibility and what rights they have. I think there just needs to be, honestly, Scott, I think that we have become, in this country, we have become so polarized in our camps, wherever we're at, and whatever the issue is, that we're not having conversation. And we're not having conversation and citing, look, this is, and coming to some form of a consensus to where it's not so drastic at either end all the time. And we that is a consensus. Now, I do believe there's things that are absolute right and absolute wrong. I believe in absolute truth. I believe the Bible teaches us there is absolute truth, and it comes from God. So we have absolute truth. I think there's things that are absolutely wrong. They always will be. And there's things absolutely right. And there's certain things, if you're a firm believer in one or the other, because you have the free will, and you mentioned free will, because you have the free will to believe what you will, then you have that right to stand where you stand. And that is something that is one of the wonderful things of the liberty that this country was founded on, is people have a right to believe what they want. People have a right to worship as they will. People have a right to their opinions. You know, in many places in the world today, and certainly in past monarchies and in past history, you know, you would be executed for your thoughts or for your speech. If someone could find out that you had these thoughts or you were suspected of these thoughts, and it still goes on today. So much and horribly so in China and in the Muslim world, this happens a lot.
This brings up in anything we're having a conversation about. Is it the act or the belief that gets you in trouble?
Because the belief leads to the act. It's the act that gets you in trouble. The belief, I can believe something that's not going to affect you. I can believe that, you know what, Scott Spears is a terrible guy, and he's doing things that are horrible, and he's hurting a lot of people, in my opinion. So I have the right, I can believe this, I'm nuts if I believe this, but I can believe this, that I have the right to kill Scott. Okay, you're not going to get put in jail for saying I have that right. The minute I take an act or move towards doing it or tell someone I'm going to do it or start making plans to do it, now's when the crime comes in.
And I think that's the issue with a lot of these things, probably most notably the abortion one, is that the man can never do the act. the man can have the belief that you are pro-choice, mm-hmm. but you'll never do the act. So you're safe. Mm-hmm. That's the problem.
But see, let's just take it this way, too. It's the same kind of thing. I did not choose to be born. Would you guys agree with that? Did you choose to be born? I had no say-so in being born, but I was. And I may have been born to have some preconceived thoughts that were maybe part of my makeup. I may have some thoughts that are not very acceptable to other people. But it does not give me the right to follow through with them.
Well, you know the greatest example
of
this.
Even though I was born with them.
Well, and I know you love history, too. And just to get off these hot-button issues that were, to make it more, Adolf Hitler. Adolf Hitler commanded horrible atrocities. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to deny that. But to my knowledge, he never personally committed one.
Now, Neither did Charles Manson.
Charles Manson, same thing. Now Hitler would have been tried because he was the leader of the country, but if I was a Nazi living in Germany in the 40s and 30s, if I believed in what Hitler believed in, as long as I did not work for his government, as long as I did not personally kill any of the people, but I believed that doing that was right, I'm safe.
Yeah.
And when the trial came up, we all know the great trial. Ben Ferenz, I had him on the show, was a lawyer at the Nuremberg trials. All of those Nazis who were killing people and giving the orders who lived, like Adolf Speer and Goebbels, they all said the same thing on the stand. Why'd you do this? You had to know what was going on. Following orders. I was just following orders. They all said
that. You know what? I don't buy it.
No, I don't buy it either.
I don't buy it for a minute.
But you know what? The belief is okay. Not morally, it's okay until you commit the act. And that's a problem, I think, in a lot of cases.
Well, I don't think that we can be belief police. But the point is, if we start arresting everyone for their thoughts, everybody be in jail.
But at some point, we got to draw a line. Because we do draw a line if you give the order. You don't have to complete the act, but if you give the order...
So, okay, isn't that okay?
Oh, yeah, that's okay, but is that it? Is that the law we have to go by?
Where do you get to with this? Okay, let me just give you a good example of this. If I go around, if I firmly believe that by having an abortion that you're committing a sin against God and a sin against that child, and I firmly believe that, to me that is something, that's murder, and you deserve, that's murder right across the board. I believe that. And you're going out and you're protesting and you're preaching to everyone that it's okay to do this, then in my mind, you would be one of those people that have crossed the line. You're promoting and you're pushing murder. Now, on the other hand, someone that doesn't believe that would think I'm crazy. And we have to understand in this country, we are not a theocracy. We are not a theocracy. We are a constitutional republic that operates under democratic forms of government. And because of that, we have chose that people have free will in their thought and what they believe. We have made certain laws that said, look, we're not crossing this one. This is going to be, as a nation, we feel this is wrong across the board, and it's going to be a crime in this country. And those laws can be amended. Those laws can be changed. The Supreme Court obviously changes them. And that happens. But as far as thought and belief in who you are, we have never in this country, because of our freedom, which I believe we need to have done this. You know, if you look at the Salem witch trials, there were a lot of women that were put to death mm-hmm. and men as witches that were not witches. But they had thoughts that, or things they said that maybe people didn't agree with, or for whatever other reason. We don't, you know, back in the 50s and 60s, in the Cold War era, we did not put people to death that had communist ideas in their thought process and would speak them or talk about them. They weren't put to death. Because in this country, as long as you don't commit the act, you have the freedom to have the thought. And we have to do that, because if we didn't do that, we would be all over the place. And we would be constantly arresting people for a thought someone said they had that they may never have had.
Oh, and, yeah, right. And,
that's happened in governments forever.
And we can't do that. But the problem is that the thought can, in the snap of a finger, lead to the action. And then the action is illegal. But by that time, the person's gone. You know, the communist thing was strange because most of the time, even if these people had signed papers saying they supported the Communist Party, when they were brought before trial, they said, no, I don't believe that. And maybe they had changed their mind. That's your prerogative in life to change your mind. But just because you were brought before that committee, you didn't work. Now, that's a cause and effect. You weren't put in jail. For what
well,
you
we,
believe,
we were
but
a
you...
country that had seen communism firsthand, and the people weren't going to tolerate communism in this country. And that's why employers, why people didn't work. They said, if that's what you want, go to a place where there's communism. That's not here.
But like Al Jolson is a huge figure in Marion because he came up with President Harding's campaign song. Al Jolson said, I am not a communist. I am not. And didn't matter. Because he was brought up there and accused of it.
So that's just exactly what we're talking about.
Right.
We cannot start arresting people for their thoughts and for things they may have said or may not have said. And yes, it's sad that sometimes people's thoughts take them up to that action. But with the way the law reads and the way it should read, we cannot arrest people for thoughts. We can only arrest them for actions. And what's really sad, I mean, if you started arresting people for who they were and who they associated with, and I mean, right now there's a lot of people that call Christians bigots, racists, on and on. We'd be arresting Christians right and left. If you live in a small town in America, we have politicians in office right now that have openly called us racist for living in small towns. We're all racist because we're rural country people. And for crying out loud, I mean, what are we going to do, arrest us now? And you know, we have to be careful about how far we take those kind of extremes.
Oh, no, thoughts should never be, that's not what I'm going toward here. What I'm going toward is if you have no consequence, then your thought is probably less fervent.
You know where the consequence should be? The consequence should be, once again, I think I started this day out with do everything with charity or with love. And when there's people around you, and everyone has someone around them usually, they should have. Everyone should be nurturing and raising their kids. Teachers should be caring about their kids. And many of the only parents that a kid has is their school teacher, if you really think about it. Neighbors, different people that... Most people that have thoughts that aren't good and are going down a wrong path, someone recognized it along the way. And if they had love and charity in their heart, there's where your intervention starts. So I think that what you do, I don't think that you wait till it gets to a point that's way off the scale. It's time for intervention. You know, it's too easy to call somebody a freak or to say that person's just, man, they're goofy. You believe they think this or that. How about sitting down and having a conversation with them? How about talking about, let's put the cards out on the table and see what's what with how you're thinking, what's going on. How about the deterrent? How many young people in schools that have shot places up could have been deterred had they been called out, talked to, and pulled away? I have seen kids that were part of that. You know, there's always the kids in the school that somebody says, man, there's a school shooter if I ever did see one. There are those kids. Those kids that don't want to talk to the other kids. They may dress in all black or just kind of keep to themselves and are always, you know, saying hateful things. Or, you know, they've been found with a hit list, which you'd be surprised how much that goes on. And, okay, so what if the kids get together at school and say, you know what, let's talk about this. We care about you. You know, we don't want you to hate us. We don't want anyone to hate you. Let's do what's right. See, in this country, we've really been going down a path of, this is my world, this is how I'll act, this is my space, and everything, mine, and you're over there, and I'm over here, and we've done it. We have done the craziest stuff in this world. I'll give you a simple one that most people don't even pick up on, that I feel has caused a great problem. When I was growing up, back in the, I think, mid-1800s, jokingly I say that because I guess old people, they always say when I was growing up. They did it when I was a kid, and they'll do it when my kids are kids, or my kids' kids or whatever. But anyway, I remember that in school we played a lot of intramural ball, and all the kids had to participate. They all participated. And you had some kids that were totally uncoordinated, some kids that weren't, some kids... But they all participated. They all did what they did. Well, now we have in sports, we have the elite. I remember when my grandson, Clay, who's quite a ball player today, was in middle school, and before he got in middle school, he was playing on a private team, you know, county league team or whatever. And I remember the coach making a comment one day, okay, for the rest of these innings today, I just want my all-stars out here. My all-stars. Kids he had handpicked that were his all-stars. So I guess these other kids were what? Nothing? You know, they weren't. And, of course, it involved his kids and his coach's kids and didn't make them all-stars, but they were the, you know. And you look at that and you look at, you know, how these kids are so separated out. And because of travel ball, kids start acting like professional ball players when they're 12. Their parents buy them the uniforms, put them on the road, they stay in hotels. It's nuts. But the point is, what happens is, those kids that don't make the cut, maybe they love playing ball and they love doing all that stuff, but they're just not that good. They get pushed around. They're not even in sports anymore because they weren't good enough to be in sports. So now they're out there, so now what do I do? And they hold a resentment because these kids are having fun doing something I would love, but I can't even do that anymore. You show me an intramural ball team out there in high school that has these kids play. I mean, sure, they can go stay on the team. Coach is going to leave them on the bench. You know why he's going to leave them on the bench? I only play my kids that play travel ball because they've got the experience. So the kids that don't sit on the bench, I watch it all the time. I see it all the time. Praise God for our coaches. You know, and I don't know coaches otherwise, so I'm not pointing a finger at you. But our coaches at Elgin right now, you know, we've got some kids on the team that are one particular in a manager's role that's just what that kid needs. Just what he needs, but he's part of the team, and he's included. We stopped including everybody, and we started making specializing in everything. And a lot of these kids that normally would have somewhat of a normal upbringing and feel like they're part of the group even when they're not that good are pushed completely out of the group. They have nowhere to go, and now they're being forced to do something that might fit them better. What if I always wanted to play ball? You know, Johnny Bench, not Scott, Pete Rose. Pete Rose is a whole other subject. But, you know, Pete Rose was never a very talented player. They called him Charlie Hustle. He worked his buns off. He was the best utility player that baseball ever saw. And that's why he was as good as he was. He never stopped working. That's not necessarily what we look for today. And, it's sad, but I think that we need to realize that we start, and I'm not talking about everyone getting a trophy either. I'm talking about at least including everyone in everything. You know, just because you may be a good athlete, but sometimes because you're a good athlete, someone doesn't think that you're going to do well on the chess club. They'd make fun of you, wouldn't they? Yeah. Can you imagine a quarterback on the chess club? Why not? He may love to play chess. He may be great at it. You see what I mean? And we pigeonhole people, and we direct them. One of the things that sends me to the moon, and has for a long time, is this thing about the gifted class, the gifted students. What are the other students? Ungifted? What are the other students? Just sewer waste? You know, could we please have our gifted kids to the third period class now? And they walk out the door, and the other kids are going, I guess I'm not gifted. I got news for them. God gifted every one of them, and he made them all special and wonderful in the way he designed them to have a perfect, beautiful, wonderful life. And just because you're good in academics does not make you any more gifted than anyone else. Because I know a lot of people that are gifted with a lot of common sense that go a long ways that were never academically gifted. And people in all kinds of areas of their life that are really good and really do things well. But we chose to use this word gifted. I think that right there, the very fact that our educators and the people that are in that position have chosen to use that terminology tells me they're headed in the right place. You understand what I'm saying? And something needs to change. Because by you may be making that kid feel great because they're gifted, but what are you doing to the kid that's hearing them call gifted? Does he have any choice that he's not gifted? If that's where your gifted standard lies, did he have any choice in that? Was it a lack of work? No. Was it a lack of any? No. You weren't born with the brains this kid was academically, so we're going to call them gifted and hold them up.
I mean, is it better if they call it some? Because I remember when I was in school, it was called TAG. They'd say, TAG, report to this room. Now, TAG was talented and gifted, but nobody knew what that meant. I don't even think I knew what it meant. It was TAG. You're the TAG group.
Well, they'll make great strides, just not say over the loudspeaker. Would the mentally challenged kids please meet at third period? We wouldn't dare say that. That would be a horrible thing to say. But by saying the other, you're saying it anyway.
You know the problem, though? I mean, I know what it's when I've been in the schools. Like the kids who get medication. Now, they don't say that at all, but they will come in, they'll call the room, and they'll say, can I have Johnny and Elaine and da-da-da down to the office at this certain time of the day? Everybody in that class knows where they're going.
Why don't they have a time when that kid knows to show up?
Because I think the kids don't show up a lot.
Well, then if they don't show up, then you go get them. But, I mean, otherwise, you know, to get on the loudspeaker, hi, Pete, Johnny, Joe, you all need your Adderall.
Well, it's a very confusing thing because I'm not really sure. I don't know why people do get in certain classes. I know there are people in talented and gifted or gifted or whatever it's called, advanced. Some people call it advanced.
Okay. Well, you know, I don't really have a problem with advanced. Would the kids that are in advanced math come down? Because, yeah, that kid's great in math. He's in advanced class. You know, what's wrong with advanced? Nothing. But gifted? That one blows me away. You know, you show me a kid with Down syndrome, and most of them are extremely gifted. They're gifted to be kind and sweet. They're some of the sweetest. God has made them some of the sweetest people in the world.
Well,
and that's a gift. They're gifted.
Well, isn't that funny? Words are interesting. Because if you go to the South, now a word, a lot of times they'll say, that person is gifted. Now what that means is they're a little off. You know, socially.
Regionally.
Yeah. And that's what gifted means there. Yeah, you know, I remember somebody telling me one time that, you know, in the North, you put your crazy people in an institution. In the South, we bring them down on the couch and put them out in front of everybody because we're proud of our crazy people. So it didn't offend.
I've never heard that one, but.
Yeah, well, somebody said, and I thought, well, that's interesting. You know, I guess words only have the meaning that we give them. And
but we do give them meanings. And gifted has a meaning.
But is gifted, like you said, a Down syndrome kid is gifted. I think that's true. So they're gifted.
Their definition of gifted is kids that are really good in academics and special that way. And that's what their definition of gifted is. And it's not fair. I think that our entire system and how we even look at IQ is skewed. Because it's all skewed towards people that are academically good at academics. And not everyone's an academic, but there's some pretty brilliant people that aren't academics.
Oh,
and,
absolutely.
And I can point them out right and left all the time. I know so many people. I know master mechanics that can look at an engine, and they know what every little tick is. And by no means are they someone they would call, have been called gifted in school. I know some of our greatest leaders would have never been in a gifted, most of them, a matter of fact. Because the honest truth is, a lot of times when people have that higher scale of academic intelligence, many times the relational ability with them, with other people, is not as good as some of the kids that aren't that way. They struggle with relating. They are more, how do I want to put it, closed, more reserved within themselves, and you know, that's just the way that is. You know, I knew a kid in school that ended up being a brilliant surgeon, but he stumbled down the hall and fell into the walls.
But you know, they say that to them too. They'll call that socially inept, or they'll say shy, backward. You know, those gifted kids hear that a lot.
Some of them.
It's a weird thing, and nobody wants to. I think we don't want to. We really become worried in this country about offending groups. And I don't want to offend anybody, but you know, I don't think the intention. No, but I don't think the intention.
Oh, I don't think
always,
the intention was there either.
Right.
But I think sometimes we need to be reminded of, you know, what effect this has here or what effect this has there.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, the kids that when I was in school, the kids that got a free lunch had to hold out this card that would be punched that was different than everyone else's. Why? Why shouldn't it just look like everyone else's? Why did their card have to be pink? Every worker in that school cafeteria knew which kids were on a free lunch. Why would they have to have a pink card and the other kids have blue cards? So the kid behind him was going, look, Cheapo's getting away. He's on welfare. He's getting away. And back when we were in school, Scott, it was a very low, low percentage of kids that got that. Nowadays, it's high enough, it may not matter as much. We be sensitive about things that really can affect people long term. I'm not asking her to be mamby-pamby, even baby people, and keep them in diapers. I don't mean that at all. You know, we grow them up and make them tough, but let's do it on a level basis. Let's do it on a level scale. You recognize those kids that are struggling. And when you're in that, you've been in that position, you know the kids in school are struggling. Let a mentor step up. And if I can go back, wow, we're over time.
About a minute.
If I can go back to where I started this show, and I can plug it into every conversation we just had, do all things with love. And let love be your driving force. And if the love that God puts in our heart is our driving force, when we look at a situation, that's going to be the overriding force that decides the manner in which we do it. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if that happened, we all get along.
By the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Adam the Computer Guy is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio.